Everybody, my name's Two Beer Jim. That's all it took, and I'm an alcoholic. let's see, I'm sorry. Excuse me, Treasure. Well, it is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. We have a friend coming straight to us from Fresno, California. He's from the Fresno Fellowship on Shaw Avenue. Maybe he'll tell us what night that meeting happens when you come on up here. Somebody's up and about in Fresno these days. He's got 12 years of sobriety since 2009. One of the things, a very famous quote in this program is, there's freedom in the steps. Freedom in the steps. Freedom in the steps. So can we give a warm Valley Group welcome to Mike G. from Fresno.
My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Two Beers, Bill. That's silly. My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm grateful to be here. And I don't introduce myself like that when I meet people out on the street. I don't tell them, hey, my name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. It's not important that they know I'm an alcoholic. It's important that I know I'm an alcoholic because it's my life on the line, you know? And I feel truly fortunate to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Getting sober is the best thing that has ever happened to me. And if my family members were here, they would tell you the same thing. They'd be like, yeah, Mike, getting sober is the best thing that has ever happened to that guy. And I just celebrated 12 years, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago or a week ago, the 30th of December, yeah. The 30th of December, and I'm grateful. Getting sober, like I said, is the best thing that has ever happened to me. It's been a great 12 years, except for this last year. I don't know if I'll get into it, but this last year was really rough for me. I lost my job. I was injured, and that's when the program really kicked in for me. You know, it's you know, the saying goes, it's easy to work the program, and you know, and when everything's going fine, and you know, but when life shows up and you lose your job or there's a death in the family, then that's when you really lean on God and lean on the program to, you know, push you through. And this last year, God and the program and my friends and the fellowship have really helped me get through it. And so far, 2022's pretty good. I got a job interview coming up later this week, so I'm excited about that. Back to work. You know, and getting sober was extremely difficult for me. I grew up out of Mendota. If anybody's interested, or anybody knows of Mendota, it's in Fresno County. It's not on the west side. It's known for a lot of fishing game out there. The Slough. It's a farming community. It's a very small farming community. And I grew up out there. My parents are immigrants from Mexico, hard workers. My parents didn't drink or smoke, hard workers, you know, and there were seven boys. The story is my dad wanted to stop after 2 boys, but my mom wanted a girl. And she ended up with 7 boys. And, yeah, that's the story. And it was rough. It was rough. I'm number six out of seven. So it was rough growing up in my house. My parents would leave early in the morning, right? And they'd be at work. And it's like growing up in SPCA. I got 5 older brothers. And it was just a whole lot of something on the top of my head going on. And it was. I think that maybe that's why I speak so much now, or maybe so loud, because I got told to shut up a lot, you know, growing up as a little kid. And so it was rough growing up in my house, being the 6 out of 7 boys. In fact, when I was born, because my dad wanted to stop after 2 boys, I told you guys. So in fact, when I was born, the doctor told my dad, I did everything I could, but he still pulled through, you know, and so. All right. It was a nice little drive down here to Visalia. I think you guys got a great little fellowship here. I was here a couple months ago when Michael L. spoke, and I enjoyed it. And So I'm glad to be here. It's a beautiful night outside, and I'm grateful to be alive. Like I said, getting sober is the best thing that has ever happened to me. I grew up with a so welcome to the newcomers, or anybody who's fairly new. I can tell you that it's been my experience that most of us, more than half of us, unresolved childhood issues that led us to become alcoholics. I did not turn my phone down. Sorry about that. Most of us, more than half of us, unresolved childhood issues that led us to become alcoholics later in life. It was rough for us growing up as child, as kids. And some of us, I got some friends that had great childhoods, you know, Disneyland, family vacations, you know, their own bedroom, you know, that had great childhoods and then later became alcoholics later in life. But most of us, unresolved childhood issues that later led us to become alcoholics. So, you know, if you had a rough childhood and it wasn't fun growing up in your household, welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. You are not alone. I definitely, has definitely been my experience at my household. It was just rough. I know today that my parents love me. Like I said, they didn't drink or smoke. They were hard workers. And I believe today they did the best they could. And I'm grateful for my parents. But as a kid, I didn't know that and I didn't see that. You know, as a kid, I just see, you know, I see other kids, you know, with maybe, you know, Nike Airs, you know, and or Air Jordans, and I don't have that. And I see other kids with their dad going to them to the Little League baseball games, and my dad's not there. And so I grew up, even though I was loved, I grew up feeling unloved. Nobody really talked to me. I grew up heavy. And I wasn't the cutest kid, and so I just remember, you know, my brothers making fun of a lot, and it ate me up. It ate me up, you know. It made me not feel so good about myself. It definitely made me feel less than. It definitely made me feel as if I wasn't good enough. It definitely made me feel inadequate. And that was before I ever got to school. You know, and like I said, most of us have very similar childhoods, which led us to become alcoholics, finding a relief in alcohol. So you know, growing up out there was rough for me. Not being picked, you know, I remember at my mom's house, we had a park down the street. For my mom's, and we go play basketball, and whenever the kids would gather up and they pick teams, you know, I was the one that normally didn't get picked. I was heavy, I wasn't tall, and I always remember like not being good enough in sports and stuff. And at 8 p.m., it would have been different if my parents would have talked to me. I think children are not only so innocent, but they're very teachable, and if they're not being taught by the right teacher and being built up and being sold into and being having their little baby little self esteem being built up. If you don't do that with a kid, and other people will, you know, other people will get in their head like they did in mine, and that little kid like I did will start to believe that they're not good enough and they're not good enough. And so I grew up. That's how I grew up. When I was about 16 years old, my brother Joe was going to school. He was going to Pearl State, and he bought what they call what they call a melon truck. And basically, it's like a big long U-Haul truck. And you take it to the fields, and the pickers would load these trucks up with cantaloupes, and then you would drive the truck into the packing house. And so my brother was going to college, so he bought one so he could make some money to pay his way through college, and he sent me down to Imperial Valley. And I went down there. I had just got my driver's license. I was like 15 and a half years old, and I followed these other men down there. He was just like, you're going to go do this, and I went. And so I find myself down in Imperial Valley, surrounded by a bunch of complete strangers, and it was after our first day at work, and we're at the packing house, and we're waiting for our trucks to be unloaded, and some guy shows up with a 12-pack of beer, and I'm sitting there, 15 and a half years old, and somebody else shows up with a 12-pack of beer, and somebody hands me a beer, and I open it, and I start to drink it, and for the first time in my life, I was one of the guys. For the first time in my life, nobody was poking fun at me. I was accepted. I felt good enough. I felt as one of the guys. It's as if that beer leveled the playing field for me. And I'll never forget that. That's exactly what happened to me, because prior to that, I must have not felt that. You know, prior to that, I must have not felt like one of the guys. Prior to that, I must have not felt as if the playing field was level. I was always less than. And magic happened that day for me. And so I ran with that. So whenever I felt uncomfortable or I didn't like what was going on, I learned that when I drink, it makes me feel better. And it relieves me of myself. And so that's what happened. So, you know, when I get to be 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, I ended up going to this mechanic school. I'm a diesel mechanic by trade, and I got kicked out of high school, and my brother, Phil, the same guy who was going to college, had said, well, you're not going to just live at mom's and be a bum, because my older brother, Tony, had taken that position. So he had said, what are you going to do? And I was like, what do you want me to do? I had lost my driver's license. I had got a DUI already. And he said, he asked me this question, which is I now see as a God shot. He asked me what is it you like? And I remember answering trucks. And he said, why don't you go to school to be a truck mechanic? Because I didn't have a driver's license. And I said, I don't know how to be a mechanic. And he said, that's why you're going to go to school. And so I did. I got some financial aid. I went to this mechanic school down in Phoenix, and that's what I did, and which is really a blessing, you know, because I've been able to develop the skill that I can support myself and help others out with. And so that's what I did. So even though, so I ended up going down there, then I graduated. I remember my mom saying to me, are you going to go down there? You're not going down there to party. You're going down there to go to school. And so even though I did party, I still was able to graduate. And so I've been doing that up until last year. But. Ever since I was 19, when I moved out of my parents' house, because, like I said, my parents didn't drink or smoke or anything, from the time I was 19 to the time I got sober at 38 years old, my life was extremely unmanageable. My life was extremely dangerous and reckless. I was not happy. I was angry. I had moments. I was either very happy or I was very angry. It's like I was never content with anything. I was never in the middle. I was either happy and I was, you know, drinking it up, or I was angry drinking it up. And not much changed in my life from the time I was 19 to 38. I mean, I worked and partied. I would drink. I would work and drink. I went to jail. I did some rehabs. I got DUIs. That's what happens with me. I get DUIs. I get to drinking and I can't stay home. I feel like I'm missing out on something. It's like I got a buzz. I got some money in my pocket. I got a pickup outside. It's like, what am I doing home alone? And I get ants in my pants and I can't stay home. And I have to go out and hit the streets. You know what I mean? See what I can get into. See what I'm missing out on. What's up at the bar? Can I get lucky? You know, what are my homeboys doing? And I'm always out in the streets and I get DUIs. I'm a beer drinker. There's not many drugs. I didn't do a whole lot of drugs. I did smoke meth one time for about 5 years. I smoked a little bit of meth. Yeah, but other than that, I'm a beer drinker. And I get DUIs. That's what I do. I get DUIs. And so I got a bunch of DUIs. I get DUIs, and that's what I do. And even though I don't see it then, you know, when I'm drinking and driving, I think I'm having fun. You know, that life is passing. But now in sobriety, I look back on it and I just see how dangerous or reckless that is and how I could have. I put other people's lives in danger, put my life in danger. And, you know, that's really one of the blessings of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that we get to see the whole picture. Our eyes get to open up. You know, I really like it. I can totally see how I was blind before and just running amok and just super selfish and self-centered and not considerate of anybody else, not even my family. And now I get to see the whole picture. Now I get to see not only how dangerous and reckless my life was, but how recovery is such a blessing, you know, to be able to live this new way of living through Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step program of recovery. I often feel as if my tombstone, I don't know if I'm going to have a tombstone, but if I do have a tombstone, I feel as if it should read, "Here lies a man who has lived two lives." You know, the drunk Mike and sober Mike. Mike without a God and Mike with... Mike without a God, Mike... with a God. Mike without a program, Mike with a program. And, I got drunk at my little brother Johnny's wedding, like 2002 or something, or 2003. My little brother Johnny got married in Wisconsin. He was in the service, and he met this gal in San Diego. He was stationed. He was in the Navy. He was stationed down in San Diego. I met this gal, Jill, and she was from Wisconsin. He ended up moving back to Wisconsin, and he's got a beautiful family. He's got a beautiful wife and three beautiful kids, and they got married, and the whole family flew back out there, and I got drunk at his wedding, and it still kind of stings me. It still kind of hurts when I talk about it, and I made my amends, you know, and me and my little brother Johnny and his wife and his kids, we got a great relationship. But before they ever had any kids and they had just got married at their wedding, I went down there, so did my mom and my brothers and my sister-in-laws. I got drunk at his wedding, and it was not good. The next day, my sister-in-law, Mary Lou, who's about this tall, she's like, you know, 5'2" tall, and got in my face the very next day, and it still stings, like I said, when I share this. She got in my face, and she said, "Hey, you embarrassed us last night." And I had not a clue how to deal with that, and I looked at her, and she said it again, this time a little bit louder the second time. She said, "You embarrassed us last night." And she looked at me for a second, and then she turned away and walked away. And I had not a clue how to deal with that, or how I felt. And I remember I remember not being able to get to a beer fast enough. That was the only way I knew how to deal with my feelings and my thoughts. I don't like how I feel. I need a beer. And that released me of how I feel, you know. And I learned that at 16 years old. I don't like how I feel. If I drink, it makes me feel better. It released me of myself. And I'll never forget that. And so, you know, those are a couple. That's one little story. There's another. I also, I often try not to tell too much about the wreckage and the stories. You know, we all kind of got our stories. And this is part of my story. And everybody in here has got a story. You know, and if you're an alcoholic and you're in here and you got your story. And I feel as if we're all fortunate to be members of Alcoholics Anonymous and been given this opportunity to rectify our lives, you know, to be redeemed in a sense, you know, by Alcoholics Anonymous. And because some people are never going to get an opportunity to experience this way of living. I got a couple of my brothers that are daily drinkers, and they can use this program. And I could have used this program, you know, 20 years before I got sober, but it wasn't until I had got to my bottom, that place where it wasn't no longer fun that I was willing to try something different. And I was introduced to AA through a couple of programs that I went to stay out of jail. And so when the day came that I wanted to get sober, I knew where to go. My moment of clarity happened when I was in my apartment, and I'm watching some ESPN, and it's as if God hit the pause button for me, and it's as if the world quit turning just long enough for me to hear and see what I needed to. And that was, if I continue to drink, I'm going to continue to get in trouble. If I continue to drink, I'm going to get another DUI. And before that, I'm not going to get a DUI. You know, I'm just having fun. You know, I'm just going to go see what they're doing. You know, go see what's at the bar. You know, and I'm bored, you know, and I don't want to be home alone. And I never once thought that I would get a DUI. I never planned on getting a DUI, not one time. In fact, there's this guy from the Alana Club, his name is John P. And when I started going to AA, I would go to the Alana Club in Fresno. And John P., I was telling him about my DUIs, and I get DUIs. And he had asked me, he said, Mike, did you ever plan on getting any one of your DUIs? And nobody's ever asked me that silly question, you know? And I looked at him, and he repeated himself. He said, Mike, did you ever plan on getting any one of your DUIs? And I says, no, I never plan on getting any one of my DUIs. He says, well, maybe that's something we need to look at. And I'm like, OMG, you know? And I never plan on getting it, you know? And so this time in my apartment, it had dawned on me that if I continued to drink, I was going to get another DUI. And it's as if I could see the future. And that was my moment of clarity, you know? And I thank God for hitting the pause button for me. I thank God for that moment of clarity. And for the first time in my life, I didn't want another DUI. I was no longer okay with the consequences of my drinking. I said, I do not want that anymore. I don't want another DUI. I don't want to do another program. I don't want to, you know, and I started going to AA. And it was difficult to get sober. It was not easy, but I did it. And how I did it was I just damn near lived in the fellowship my first 2 years. Especially during the holidays. I know we just got past the holidays, but I would go visit my mom early in the morning and then just leave like at 10 o'clock. I'd be there like at 8, you know, maybe visit like till 11. Then I leave and go to the Alcapons or go to the fellowship before my brother showed up because they're going to show up with beer. You know, and I'm trying to get sober. I'm trying to get my life in order, and I don't need to be there when they're showing up with beer and them handing me beer. And my mom completely understood. And so she was like, okay, mijo, you know, I'll talk to you later. Thank you for coming by. And I did it. And like I said, I can never say this enough. It's been the best thing that has ever happened to me. There was a time I wasn't going to do the steps. Because my attitude had changed and I had some money in my pocket. I was one of those guys who said, I don't need to do the steps. I mean, I was happy. At about 90 days, I could see old Mike and new Mike. I was like, hey, I'm feeling good about it. You know, and I had some money in my pocket and I thought, yeah, maybe you don't need to do the steps. And then people were sharing, they were coming to meetings and sharing how they were relapsing because they didn't do the steps. And that scared me. That scared me. They were coming into the meeting and like, hey, I just came in off a relapse. I relapsed. And they were like, I never did the steps. I never got a sponsor. I never got the big book. And I heard those people loud and clear. And I thank those people that come into the meetings and, you know, and tell us their experience, how they relapsed. And I was like, OMG, you know, I better get a sponsor and I better do the steps. And I'm telling you guys, if you haven't done the steps, that is where the freedom is. That's where my freedom happened for me, was in the steps. It's as if I went to college. I learned so much about me, about you, about life. So I often share that what the steps did for me was they freed me from my past. There was freedom in the steps. I learned through the steps with the help of my sponsor that I was stuck in the past. It's like I was still 12 years old. You know, it's like my brothers were still beating me up. And the feelings I had experienced as a little kid and the low self-esteem, and I'm not good enough, and I'm heavy, and I'm not the cutest kid, and this and that, and it's like I never matured, I never grew out of that. And I believe that when we start to drink, we stunt our emotional growth. You know, I believe that. That was definitely my experience. And so I never emotionally grew up. I never was able to grow out of those immature thoughts because I started drinking and I was stuck. And so what I share is that what the steps did for me is they freed me from my past. And how they freed me was not that I've forgotten my past, because I can still remember my past. It's not that I've forgotten my past. I still have the memories. It's just they don't own me the way they did. They don't haunt me the way they did. And how that has happened for me was by working the steps and with the help of my sponsor, he gave me an understanding of why things happened the way they did. So once I understand why things happened the way they did, then I can accept them. Because it's hard for me to, when, you know, people say, oh, just, you got to let it go. Just forgive him. Just let it go. And I'm like, well, I don't even know why he or she did that. Like, it's hard for me to let things go if I don't have a basic understanding of why they're happening the way they are. And the steps explained that to me with the help of my sponsor. He's like, oh, Mike, he goes, you got seven. There's seven of you guys. You think your dad can afford to go buy seven pairs of Air Jordans? You know what I mean? You think your dad can afford to go buy seven acid wash jackets? Or you think, you know, maybe your dad was too busy to go to your Little League game. Maybe you ever think about that? He was at work. And I'm like, OMG. Once again. And so it's just a real basic. It's, it was just, you know, the conversation, this is how, the conversation I had with my sponsor at 39 years old, I'm telling you people, I could have used that conversation when I was 8 years old. That's something I think kids are so valuable. I could have used that conversation at 8 years old, but you know what? Better late than never. Better late than never. You know? That's something I got a couple little kids that live in my apartment complex, and there's one little heavyset little kid. His name's Angel. I've been at this apartment complex. I've lived there for about 10 years now. And I got to see this little ham and egg, as I call him. He's a little guy, right? And I got to see him, and I got to sew into him, and I got to talk to this guy. He's like my, I don't want to call him my little project, but one of my promises is that we will not regret the past, nor will we shut the door on it. So I've never forgotten in my past about how I felt as a kid and how I wish somebody would have talked to me as a little kid. If there's one thing I can change about my past, it would be that somebody would have talked to me and explained stuff to me. It would have made a world of a difference, but I didn't get that, right? My sponsor is the one that had the conversation with me. Better late than never. So I got this little kid in my apartment complex, and I just, every time I get a chance, I just talk to this kid. And you know what I tell him? I tell him, you got a good mom and dad. You got a mom that loves you. You got a dad that loves you. You're a smart, good-looking little kid. And don't you let nobody tell you different. Don't you let those bullies at school tell you anything different. When them bullies tell you things different, they're lying to you. They're not happy, and that's why they're being mean to you. You are a good-looking little kid. You're a smart, good-looking little kid. You got a good mom, a good dad. And he just looks at me. And I says, come here, can I get a hug? And I'll take down a knee and I'll give him a little hug and he'll hug me. And I just, that stuff like that makes a world of a difference. You know what I mean? And so what the steps did for me, they freed me from my past. So what they did, they taught me how to live in today. Today I'm not 12 years old. I'm not a 14-year-old little kid anymore, you know? I just turned 50. I'm about to turn 51 years old. But I was stuck in my past. And the steps freed me from my past is what I'm saying. And the other thing they did for me was they led me to God. Hallelujah. The steps led me to God. They led me to God. And I'm going to tell you guys, that's really where it's my faith that I've been able to develop. Because I wasn't a churchy kind of guy, and I'm still not a churchy kind of guy, even though I did do a lot of church early in recovery. I'm not. But I definitely have a relationship with God as I understand him. And through the process of working the 12-step program of recovery, I've been able to develop this thing called faith. And this last year has been really rough for me. And my faith has carried me through, like I shared in the beginning. I got this one niece of mine, Amanda, and I would go into, when I was drinking, I would go into my mom's house, and when I'd walk in, she'd walk out. She would look at me, and she would split. And if she was in a room by herself, and I walked in, she'd look at me, and she'd walk out. And I knew I needed to make some amends to her. I always thought she was angry at me. I had wrote her down on my eighth step, and I was talking to my sponsor about her, and I said, Amanda's so mad at me. You know, I haven't been a good uncle to her, and I don't love on her, and I don't talk to her. And my sponsor asked me, he says, well, do you think she's angry at you, or do you think she's scared of you? And it's as if it just stopped me in my tracks. And I looked at him and he says, my sponsor, he's this gentle giant. He always sees that, you know, deer in the headlights look on my face. You know what I mean? He says, do you think she's scared of you? And I'm looking at him and he's like, Mike, do you think she has been scared of you? Because I'm thinking she's angry at me. She might have been angry, but you know what? When he asked me that, I'm thinking, you know what? You're right. She's probably scared of me. You know, she's a little thing like this, right? I mean, look at me. Imagine me drunk and loud and spit coming out of my mouth, you know, and I'm, so I says, yeah, so I write down my amends, and so I go to my mom, and I told my sponsor about it, and he said, Mike, don't try to corner her. God will make an opportunity for you to make your amends to her. I said, all right, so, you know, I'm making my amends, and I made my mom and my brothers and my sister-in-laws, and I'm making my amends. I go to a couple employers, and I got some financial amends I got to make. I got a student loan that I haven't paid, and I paid that. You know, I start making payments to that student loan, and I started to experience this freedom through the steps. And so my niece Amanda is like, because I'm wanting to do these demands. I'm wanting to, because, so I'm at my mom's house, and when I pull up, I can see Amanda is there. My mom's house has got the two big windows in the front, right? One, you can see the kitchen, the other one, you can see the living room. I see Amanda's there, and I remember what my sponsor said, don't try to corner her, you know, just God will give you, God will make it possible for you. So I'm there, and everybody knows I'm sober by now, you know what I mean? The word's out, Mike ain't drinking no more, he's sober, you know, but I imagine they're still holding their breath, you know what I mean? They're like, we'll see how long this, I remember my brother Lewis, I told my brother Lewis I had celebrated 90 days. I go, Lewis, I go, I got 90 days, man. And my brother Lewis told me, he said, well, we'll see how long that lasts. And I remember it hurt my feelings, right? And I told my sponsor about it. He said, Mike, he goes, you've been drunk 19 years, dude. He goes, you got 90 days. You can't compare 19 years, you know, 90 days. I was like, all right. So I'm in my house, at my mom's house. And I see Amanda. And I go, hey, Amanda. She looks at me. She goes, hey, Bill. And I'm about to bust a move, right? And she gets up and she walks outside. And I don't want to chase her, so I wait a little bit, and I kind of play it off in the kitchen. She's outside, and then I was like, I'm going to go outside. So I go outside, and she's not, I can see, she's not, there's no reason for her to go outside except avoid me. And so she's outside, and I go outside, and she doesn't leave. She's just kind of standing there, and she's got her face down. And I said, Amanda, I go, can I talk to you just for a minute? And she doesn't say anything, but she doesn't leave. Right? And she's standing there, she's got her face down, and I take a step closer to her, and I say, Amanda, I said, I am so sorry for all the things I've done to you, raising my voice, because I would yell. I said, Amanda, I am so sorry for yelling at you all those times. I said, that is no way an uncle should treat her niece. I have failed you as an uncle. I said, I'm so sorry that I've been so mean to you. And I'm looking down at her, and she picks her head up, and there's a tear coming down her eyeball, her little baby eyeball, right? There's a tear coming down her eye, and I look at her, and the moment I see her crying, I start to cry, right? I start to cry like that. I says, Amanda, she's looking at me, by now she's got her face up, and she's looking at me, and I says, I love you. And she looks at me, she says, oh, Michael, I love you too. And we just gave it and praised this big old hug. My sponsor told me, he says, you can't do anything about the memories you give in your family. He says, but what you can do is make new memories. He says, you can start making new memories, and eventually the new memories will outweigh the bad memories. And so what he told me to do with Amanda was, he goes, why don't you offer to buy her something? Make a new memory. So I told Amanda, I go, Amanda, is there something I can buy for you? And Amanda, I don't know if she knew the question was coming, but she had an answer for me real quick. And she's like, yeah, you know, Michael, I've been wanting this like little electronic thing. She knew what it was, the model. It was like $160 at Best Buy. I don't know what she had. Somebody must have told her I was coming with that question, because she knew exactly what she wanted. And I said, I'm gonna get that for you. She told me what to do, and I told her I was gonna go get it for her. And I got it for her, and I bought it for her. And my sponsor was right. He says, you make new memories. And I've been able to do that with my mom, you know, with my mom. I've been able to pray with my mom, been able to do all this good stuff. And my sister-in-law, Mary Lou, about 4 years ago, I made my amends to Mary Lou. And she says, when I made my amends with her, she was just so happy for me. You know, I went to high school with Mary Lou. We all grew up out of Mendota. And she says, they cry. They start tearing up on me. And she says, and you know, which makes me tear up, you know? And she just said, she goes, Michael, you just stay sober. And she embraced me, gave me a big old hug. About 4 years ago, my sister-in-law, Mary Lou, I was at her house, and we're having dinner, and she invites me over, we're eating. And just out of the blue, she just looks at me, and she says, Michael, you are a joy to be around. I know, and I look at her, I look at her, and I'm like, Mary Lou, thank you so much. She just looks at me, you know, and I just look, and that's what has happened. We're born again, as our book says. Now we get these brand new lives in here, you know. And my brother Joe, one time, this is maybe about 6 years ago, I was at his house and we're having dinner. And my family doesn't really know much about AA, besides that that's how their brother Mike got sober, you know. So they don't know anything about the staff. They don't know anything about the fellowship and service. But they just know that that's how their brother Mike got sober. So I was at my brother Joe's house maybe a handful of years ago, and we're having dinner. And we eat the way my dad used to eat. My dad, we were over our plates, and we're just shoving the food in our mouths. You know what I mean? That's how we eat, like cavemen. And my dad would eat like that. I remember one time my dad was eating like this, and there was a fly in the kitchen, and my mom told my dad, and told him in Spanish. Said, yeah, we should watch out for that fly. And then my dad didn't miss a lick. He was like, that fly's the one that better watch out. And he was just shoveling that food in his mouth. And that's how I eat. And that's how my brother Joe eats. And we're at my brother Joe's house and we're eating. And I just, I quit shoveling. And I tell my brother Joe, I says, I think I'm going to quit going to those AA meetings. And my brother Joe has not a clue about AA, right? And he stops eating and he looks at me and says, what did you say? I said, I think I'm going to quit going to those AA meetings. He says, now why in the hell would you say something like that to me? I said, hey, I'm sorry. Real bad joke. He says, yeah, real bad joke, Mike. And he just turned back and he just kept shoving. And so he doesn't know anything about AA, but what he does know is that's what saved his brother Mike's life. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous does. It saves our lives. That's why I feel so fortunate to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because some people ain't never going to get to be come in here. You know what I mean? And so, you know, my mom, I've been able to do stuff with my mom, and I've been able to pray with my mom and be able to take my mom to road trips. Not only that, I got the serenity and I got this peace in my heart. You know, I was very angry before. I would talk trash about people. I had not a clue who they were. I would see somebody on the street corner and I would just talk trash about them. And I now know that there's so much ugliness in me that stuff was just oozing out. You know, I couldn't contain it. And that's not who I am today. You know, I see somebody, whether it's the homeless or something, like, oh, you know, it's like my buddy Sal Petita said, Alcoholics Anonymous turned me into a big, tough cream puff, you know? And what has happened is I got a God conscious, right? God has come to life in me, you know? And I'm considerate of other people. That's what has happened. I've been changed. And I'm grateful for that, you know? I went to, I'm running out of time. I got 5 minutes. I went back and visited my little brother Johnny in Wisconsin. His wife works at a treatment center in Wisconsin. And I got to go back here. I've been back like 3-4 times. And the second time I went back, I got to go to this meeting in Wisconsin. Once a week, they open it up to the public and they let people, outside people come in. It's a treatment center. So I got to go to that meeting and experience that. And it was really great. I really enjoyed it. So later that night, we're having dinner at the house. And Jill, my little brother Johnny's wife, said, Mike, what did you think about the meeting? And I thought, it was great. I really enjoyed it. And she says, now, you went to a treatment center, didn't you? And I said, yeah, I guess. I said, but in Fresno, we call them rehab. I went to a rehabilitation center. I go, you guys call them treatment centers out here? And she said something I'll never forget. She says, yeah, Mike, she says, we call them treatment centers out here. She says, because what we have found is that most people don't need to be rehabilitated. She says, we call them treatment centers because what we have found is most people don't need to be rehabilitated. They need to be habilitated. And I thought, what the heck? So I looked up the definition of rehabilitation, right? And one of the definitions is to be returned to normal health. And another definition is be returned to normal living. So when she said they don't need to be rehabilitated, they need to be habilitated, that made all the sense in the world to me. It's like, that's exactly what happened to me. I didn't need to be rehabilitated. I needed to be habilitated. I needed to be taught normal living. And as I like to say, I needed how to be taught how to deal with my feelings. Because that's what I drink over. I said that right in the beginning, right? I don't like how I feel. I drink. It makes me feel better. And so if you're a newcomer, you're fairly new, it's our feelings that eat us up, man. It's our thinking. Yes, a psychic change. But usually our thinking is over our feelings. You know, I don't like, maybe I got some jealousy going on. I don't like what's going on. I don't like how she treated me. I don't like what she said. I feel less than. I wish I had this. I wish I had that. Why don't I? We've got all these questions. We've got all these feelings. And that's what I was drinking over. So I needed to be taught how to deal with my feelings. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me with the help of my sponsor. So being Turkish, you know, if you're a newcomer or fairly new. I got this other friend of mine, Melanie, and God, I remember when I did my steps, my sponsor had told me, you're going to, God's going to put a lot of men into your life. And he has, and he's putting women in my life too. Melanie's one that she's an older woman, and I'm able to go to her and ask her a lot of questions, really about women. So I got sober when I was 38, and I started drinking when I told you guys, I had a low self-esteem. I didn't think much about myself. And I had never experienced love. I'm so glad I thought about this. I love telling this. I got sober when I was 38 years old, and I had never been married, and I don't have any kids. And I had never experienced love. Yeah, there's been women in my life. There was always alcohol and drugs involved. Never a sober relationship. And I told you guys, I never learned how to deal with my feelings and my thoughts, my emotions. And so when I got into sobriety, and I wanted to start dating, God had put this woman in my life, Melanie, an older woman that I was able to talk to, and took her brain. And she told me some stuff that I'll never forget. You know, she said, you be honest with those women. She says, they might not appreciate what you have to say. They might not like what you have to say, but they'll always appreciate the honesty. She said, if you're dating one and some other girl wants to date or you want to date, she says, and they ask you, you're telling me I want to date, I got this other date going on. She says, you just be honest with them. And I have been, you know. But I've been able to experience love in recovery. And, you know, I just smile when I think about that, because if it wouldn't have been for AA, I would have never experienced what it's like to fall in love. I've been able to fall in love in recovery. I also got to experience breakups, right? Now, that wasn't fun either. But I'm telling you guys, it was so much worth the dance, you know, as the Garth Brooks song goes. It was so much worth the dance, because if it wouldn't have been for Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have never tapped into that emotion of mine. I would have never got to experience that. And I'm telling you guys, that has been one of the biggest blessings in Alcoholics Anonymous, is for me to wholeheartedly love another human being, another woman, and deal and experience that, you know. And I'm just so fortunate that I've been able to experience that. And I look forward to falling in love again, you know. I look forward to doing that all again, all over again. It's been such a blessing, because I know I'm repeating myself, but if it wouldn't have been for AA, I would have never got to experience it. I would have died not only drunk, but not ever knowing what love felt like, you know. And so that's just one of the blessings that has happened to me. So there's a whole lot of learning that happens to us in Alcoholics Anonymous, a whole lot of growing that happens to us in Alcoholics Anonymous. So welcome to the newcomers. First and foremost, I'm an alcoholic, and I know what alcohol does to me. It is crystal clear to me. One of the things that keeps me sober is not to forget what my life was like when I was drinking. That is a healthy memory that I have. I know exactly where I'm going to go if I drink. I know exactly who I am if I drink, you know. And I don't have to, I didn't get sober alone, and I don't have to stay sober alone. You know, God has put people in my life to help me out. And the people are here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. One last little story. There's this guy that's crossing the street, and he looks down and there's a snake down there, and the snake wants him to pick him up and take him across the street. And the guy looks down at the snake and he says, no, he says, if I pick you up, you're going to bite me. And the snake says, no, I won't, man, I need to get across the street, my family's over there. Help me out, do me a favor, pick me up, take him across the street. The guy says, no, the snake says, I promise, I won't bite you, I promise. So the guy picks up the snake, and he walks the snake across the street. And when he goes to drop the snake off down on the sidewalk, the snake bites him. And the guy says, you told me you weren't going to bite me. And the snake looks at him and he says, you knew I was a snake when you picked me up. And I relate that to alcohol. I know exactly what alcohol does to me. There is no joking. There is no confusion. There is no mystery. I know exactly what alcohol does to me. I'm an alcoholic. And if I pick up that first can of beer and I drink it, I know it's going to bite me. I know what it does to me. And there's no mystery. There's no lying to myself. There's no, I know my truth. And so welcome to the newcomers and everybody who's fairly new. Alcoholics Anonymous is a beautiful thing. And my time's up. Thank you for allowing me to come and share. God bless each and every one of you guys. I'll keep coming back. Thank you.